So this is Carly from Earful of Queer on CFRU 93.3, and I'm here with Aoife and Galia, two midwifery students who gave a workshop this past weekend at Queer Riot called Empowering Paps for People with Cervixes, and we're going to talk about paps today.
Okay. Yeah. We wanted to do this workshop at Queer Riot because, first of all, there's a lot of like misconceptions about PAPs and who should get them and why we need them and how often you should get them and those sorts of things. But also for queer people specifically, there's like some added barriers and myths and maybe even fears as well about getting a PAP exam that are like built into the bigger picture of the medical system and how we like see and treat specific bodies that are accessing healthcare.
Yeah, there's quite a long history of women and trans people's bodies being pathologized and medicalized within the patriarchal dominant medical system. And even today, a lot of folks who are stigmatized face certain barriers while accessing healthcare and maybe don't access healthcare for a lot of valid reasons. So we wanted to debunk the myth that only certain types of women or only certain people with certain types of bodies need to get PAP exams, and also, you know, talk about why that's important, and also talk about some ways to make the experience better and even an empowering learning opportunity.
Yeah, cool. So maybe now we could dive into like who needs a PAP.
Yeah.
And I think that those like themes about the effect that like the patriarchy has on healthcare and this specific exam will kind of come up throughout the interview. But so just talking specifically about who needs a PAP exam, pretty much anybody who has a cervix who has ever been sexually active in their life. And both of those kind of definitions are really broad. Women with a cervix need to get PAPs. And the definition of sexual activity is really broad as well. So anybody that has any sort of sexual contact involving their genitals and anyone else's body or toys, even if you're not having sex that involves penetration, even if you're only having sex with other people with cervixes, if you always use protection, even if you haven't had sex in years, or if you only have specific kinds of sex, whenever your body is coming into contact with other people's bodies or toys, you're putting yourself at some degree of risk, and that's why it's really important to take care of your sexual health. And one of the main topics that we wanted to talk about was that everybody who has a cervix can include people that don't identify as women. So for transgendered folk or trans men, if you still have a cervix, then you definitely should still think about getting a PAP. If you've had a hysterectomy but you still have a cervix, then that cervix unfortunately is just as vulnerable to getting cervical cancer, which we'll talk a bit about later. And also, if you've had a total hysterectomy and your cervix has been removed, then clearly you can't get a PAP because you don't have a cervix. But if you have a history of having PAPs that came back as abnormal, or if you have a strong family history of cervical cancer or other cancers related to reproduction, then definitely talk to your healthcare provider and see if there's still some regular testing that you should be undergoing to keep track of your sexual health and well-being. And then the other main group of people that should keep in mind about getting PAPs are trans women who've had bottom surgery. So if you've had surgery where you've had a vagina created, then you may also have had a cervix created. And if so, unfortunately, that cervix is also vulnerable to the changes that can happen when we're talking about cervical cancer. So getting regular PAP exams is pretty much important for anybody who has a cervix.
And I'm wondering if we should back up a moment and just talk about what cervixes are. In our workshop, we were able to have a little anatomy lesson with some diagrams and some pictures, which isn't possible on the radio, but just so everyone knows what part of bodies we're talking about, cervix, it actually means neck, and it is an elongated opening to the uterus, and it can open and close and come up and down within the body. It can also change consistency from month to month and over time. So it's basically if the uterus is shaped like a pear, and sort of an upside down pear that sits right under the pubic bone inside the abdominal cavity, then that the sort of longer neck of the pear would be the cervix. And that's the part that is tested in a pap exam that we can talk more about.
Yeah. Maybe we should talk a little bit about why paps are so important.
Yeah. So a pap test is a screening tool that's used to prevent the development of cervical cancer. And a speculum is used to visualize the cervix, and then some cells are taken from the cervix using a little small broom-like device that scrapes off cells, much like just scratching your hand would flake off some skin cells. And those cells are collected and sent to a lab that can be used to detect abnormal cervical growth, which can foreshadow the development of cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. Because cervical cancer is considered preventable, because it's a cancer that takes a long time to develop. So with regular pap exams, with the possibility to detect abnormal growth of the cells, it's actually possible to treat the situation before it develops into cancer.
Yeah. And even like a lot of people that will have these abnormal cells or cells that are starting to change, yeah, like Galia was saying, it can take quite a while before it progresses into something that would be troublesome. But also one thing that we just want people to keep in mind is that an abnormal pap doesn't necessarily mean that those cells would eventually become cancerous. You can have an abnormal pap, and if they say that cells are starting to change, then sometimes your body just takes care of it itself and your next pap will be normal. But also abnormal paps don't mean cervical.
Mm-hmm. And that's what your healthcare provider would mean by a screening tool as opposed to a diagnostic tool. It just screens for the risk of a certain disease. It doesn't tell you yes, you have it, or no, you don't. So other reasons why paps are important. So one of them was the prevention of cervical cancer.
Right.
And the other one is HPV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're kind of interlinked, because kind of what research has been telling us is that most cells that would be changing on someone's cervix are doing so as a result of HPV. So that's the human papillomavirus. And it's a sexually transmitted virus that is transmitted from skin-to-skin contact. And there's like 100 different kinds of HPV, but there's only a few specific ones that can be troublesome. So either causing these changes like on your cervix, or leading to genital warts, neither of which are a lot of fun. So when you're doing a pap and you're screening for these changes on your cervix, essentially what you're looking for is to see if HPV has had an effect on any of these cells. And HPV is actually the most common STI. Most people that are sexually active will have come into contact with it at some point, and for the most part your body will see HPV and within a year or so usually just get rid of it on its own. You'll never have any symptoms. You'll never know that you had it. And then once it's left your body, you wouldn't be able to pass it on to anybody else. But there are a few specific strains of HPV that are considered to be the most troublesome, linked to cervical cancer, but also linked to other types of cancers, of the vagina, vulva, anus, and penis. So it's not just about cervixes, but that tends to be what we talk about the most because there's such a strong connection there.
So having HPV doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get cervical cancer, but if you have developed cervical cancer, it's likely that HPV was the cause of it. There are some things that increase your risk, and we can also discuss some ways to reduce your risk.
Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, having a lot of sexual partners does increase the risk that you'll be exposed to HPV. So, be as safe as you can. If that means using condoms or gloves or dental dams, anything to decrease the amount of skin that's getting exposed to other people's skin is a really good idea. Tied up with that is monogamy, so decreasing your number of sexual partners. There's also a connection between smoking cigarettes and HPV and cervical cancer. And also there's a connection between having lots and lots of babies and developing cervical cancer as well. So to protect yourself, we've already talked about using protection and minimizing kind of your exposure. There's also an HPV vaccine that has come out, and we encourage you to talk to your healthcare provider if you're interested in that. The vaccine is relatively new on the market, and a lot of people are skeptical about it because it hasn't undergone long-term trials because it's so new. But the idea is that it protects against those specific strains of HPV that are most likely connected to cervical cancer. And it's being marketed as preventative. We know the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada in 2007 said that for Canadian women between the ages of 20 and 44, that cervical cancer is the second most likely cancer that a woman will develop. And so out of that, this push for the HPV vaccine has come. And it's being marketed for preteens, so I think it's starting around 11 is when they're recommending that girls get it. And then up into your late 20s, I think it's 26 or 27, they're not offering it because I think the logic is that by that point you'll likely have already been exposed to HPV if you're sexually active. And I know there's some talk about people thinking that if you have the HPV vaccine, then maybe you'll be more casual about safety, but I don't buy that personally. And then also some people are just skeptical about vaccines in general, so talk to your healthcare provider and see if it's something that would make sense for you and if you can afford it, because it's actually also kind of pricey if it's not covered by your extended health benefits.
Mm-hmm. And again, one of the best ways to reduce the risk of developing cervical cancer is to get regular PAPs. And studies in Canada have shown that queer women and trans men access healthcare and in general, and PAPs specifically, at lower rates than heterosexual women. So it doesn't mean that queer women and trans men are somehow inherently more at risk for developing cervical cancer, but by accessing PAPs less, they might not be getting the early detection as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe it would be a good idea, we've touched on this already, but just to think there's like some pretty solid reasons why queers don't access sexual health services, like getting PAPs as much or in the same way that heterosexual folks do. And I think there's a lot of myths out there about who needs PAPs. So there's a really awesome campaign that has come out that we used quite a bit for resources during when we were working on this presentation and workshop. But the Check It Out campaign coming out of Planned Parenthood and the Check It Out Guys campaign has some really great information about getting a PAP if you're queer or trans. And so maybe we'll give out that website. It's just checkitout.ca, but there's hyphens between the words, so it's like check-it-out.ca. And you can also just Google Check It Out or Check It Out Guys to get some more information specifically about queers and PAPS.
So we just wanted to talk a little bit about what to expect when going for a PAP exam and what happens during a PAP exam. Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can just preface this by, we've done a fair bit of research about this procedure. Gally and I have also both had PAPs, and we've had the opportunity to do the exam in our midwifery placements. But we're not experts, so definitely we want to encourage anyone with more questions after this interview to talk to your friends, talk to any nurses or doctors or midwives or other healthcare providers that you know.
Yeah. Well, okay, I want to preface this whole thing. Okay, so I'm going to talk about what's going to happen, what happens during a PAP exam and what to expect. Everyone's experience is different, and there's no way really to guarantee what will happen when you go, depending on the clinic and the care provider. And we also wanted to talk about some ways to make the exam better. A lot of people describe their PAP experiences as really horrible, embarrassing, painful, uncomfortable, shameful. Those are a lot of descriptions that we heard from people at our workshop. We wanted to offer some suggestions that we've encountered in our own experiences and gathered from others, but also not to say that the onus needs to be on the person getting the PAP to make it a better experience. There are some ways that we can try to be empowered when going in and dealing with healthcare providers. But if someone still has a really bad experience because of the way that a care provider has acted, it's by no means the fault of the person receiving the care. We're not saying that, you know, you need to do these things and prevent, you know, being in really bad, uncomfortable or traumatic experiences within the medical system. Okay, so PAP tests in Ontario are performed by family doctors, gynecologists, nurses, nurse practitioners, and midwives, as well as most sexual health clinics. So when you go in for a PAP, the care provider will ask you to remove your clothing from the waist down. They should offer you
a drape or a gown, yeah, or a sheet or something to
cover up your, yeah, bottom half. And you'll be asked to lie on your back on the examining table. It's possible to ask to be in a semi-sitting position, to have the head of the bed raised, or to have several pillows put under your head, which will enable you to maintain eye contact with the care provider. There's no reason, there's nothing anatomically that makes it impossible to do the exam in that position, and it can be a little bit more of an empowering situation than being flat on your back. You will also be asked to move your bum right down to the end of the table, bend your knees, and put your feet into stirrups. Hopefully the care provider will ask your consent along the way every time they do something to your body. This is often not the case. It is possible to ask, you know, to have them walk you through everything that they're doing, to ask permission before they touch your body in certain ways, and to be able to say stop, slow down, or something like that if you need a break during the exam. So once the person receiving care is in the proper position, the care provider will insert a metal or plastic instrument called a speculum into vagina to open it so that the cervix can be seen. And that's when a small brush or broom-like device is used to take a sample of the cervical cells.
Maybe we can also just talk a little bit more about speculums.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like in some ways they're this like kind of like scary medical tool, but they don't have to be. If you can get your hands on a speculum just to play with it, see how it works. We would encourage you to do that. Your care provider might have a speculum handy that they use to show people speculums, or that they have on display, something that isn't clean or sterile so that you could touch it. And essentially, a speculum has two extensions. Sometimes they're called bills that are inserted into the vagina, and then the care provider uses a handle to make the bills expand so that they're holding open the walls of the vagina so they can see your cervix. And the plastic speculums are disposable, so they're thrown out after they're used on you. We would encourage you, if you're interested, to ask your care provider if you can keep it, if you're interested in checking out your cervix on your own time. And then the metal speculums are reused, and they're sterilized and kept sterile between use.
Yeah, so the whole exam should take between 2 and 5 minutes. You may feel some pressure and discomfort, but it doesn't have to hurt, and the whole exam doesn't have to be painful at all. Something that also might be offered during a pap exam is certain swabs for STIs that can only be detected by a swab of the cervix. There's other ways to detect STIs, like blood tests and swabs taken from like the external genital area.
Mm-hmm. And even through your urine now, mm-hmm. they're starting to check STIs that way.
But for chlamydia and gonorrhea, the most effective way to test for those STIs is through cervical swabs that can be done while the speculum is in place. So that's something that you can talk to your care provider about, or that they may offer while you're already having a speculum exam being done. And there's another part of an exam that often happens at the same time, and that's called a bimanual exam. And once the speculum is removed, sometimes this can actually happen before the speculum exam and the cervical swabs, or before or after. And this part is a bimanual exam, and it involves having two gloved fingers inserted into the vagina with the other hand on top of your body, on your abdomen. And the purpose of this exam is to feel for any masses or lumps or asymmetry of the ovaries and whatever can be felt of the uterus. So basically the care provider, between two fingers, one inside and one outside, is attempting to feel for ovaries and other things going on in there. Mm-hmm. And that's something also to be aware of might happen. You can ask for it not to happen, or you can ask for it to happen, but often is lumped in with a pap exam, or what's also referred to as like an internal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just like with when they're using the speculum, the bimanual exam, it shouldn't hurt. You might feel a fair bit of pressure, the same as when the speculum is opening. It would be really normal to feel pressure, but not pain. And so if you're ever feeling pain during the exam, then let your care provider know right away. Mm-hmm. So during our workshop that we did at Queer Riot in Guelph this past weekend, we made a list with some of the folks at the workshop of some things that you can do to make your pap experience a less scary one or a more positive one, depending on how you look at it. So some people said that bringing a friend or a lover or a partner or a sibling was something that made them feel a lot better. Having someone there to hold your hand and tell you how great you are can be really helpful. We already talked about asking your care provider to tell you what they're doing as they're doing it. It can be helpful for them to let you know if they're halfway through the exam, if they're three quarters, just so you know what to expect. You can always ask your care provider for a mirror if you're interested in being able to see their hands or seeing the speculum as it's being inserted, or if you want to see if you can see your cervix. Most health clinics would have a mirror on hand for you to do that. Take deep breaths. That's something that sounds really easy, but it can actually be really hard. But if you're able to do that to keep yourself grounded and to keep getting lots of oxygen and just to help all those muscles relax, it'll decrease the stress going on in your muscles during the exam. We would really encourage you to give your healthcare provider feedback. Tell them how you felt about the exam, if they did something that you found really empowering, that made you feel in control, or if you have some tips that you would hope they would do something differently next time. That can be really useful feedback. We would encourage people to stay stop at any point of the exam. And if stop is a hard word, then think about other words that you can use. Think about arranging with your care provider if you raise your hand or if you say some specific safe word, that they would know that that means that you need them to take a break. And also, just after the exam, be really proud of yourself for taking charge of your body and your sexual health and doing something that can be kind of hard, but is really important, and do something nice for yourself, like go for a walk, or play with a kitten, or eat some chocolate, or give yourself some love.
Some other tips that we've heard for getting through a PAP and for making it a better experience is also to not to take your clothes off until you actually have to. You often go into the examining room first, meet the care provider, have discussions first, and then you'll be given an opportunity to take off your bottoms while they leave the room. Some folks may consider letting their care provider know if they've had bad PAP experiences in the past and why, and possibly some suggestions to make it better. It may make the situation better to let the care provider know that you have had unpleasant experiences and that you can find ways to work with them to make this experience better. You may also consider whether or not to disclose your sexual orientation and practices to that care provider. It's always your choice about disclosing. So disclosing may result in better and more informed health care, but it can also put you at risk of homophobia and transphobia. So that's a choice that folks have. If you feel like you are being treated badly during an exam and facing homophobia, then it is possible to say stop and to end the exam and leave at any time. We've also heard some folks talk about the ways that PAP tests can be traumatizing and can feel like sexual assault. And if you're being, you know, made to be in certain positions and having your body touched without permission, especially something as violating as having the insertion of a speculum without consent, those things, like, that is sexual assault and can be very traumatizing. PAP exams can also be really triggering for folks that are survivors of sexual violence, even if the exam itself wasn't abuse or traumatic. It's also possible to talk to your care provider beforehand Again, it's your choice, and you really have to weigh out the situation about whether you feel like it would be in your benefit to disclose a history of abuse with your care provider, you know, and to work on ways to avoid triggers and to get grounded after dissociation, if that's a tactic that, a strategy that you use to cope in situations like that. Again, that's your choice. And it may be possible to seek out clinics where care providers have experience providing care for the queer community, and also for survivors of sexual violence. So there are also some questions that you can ask your care provider before you go for the appointment or before you get undressed for the exam, that may give you more information about the experience that they have, and the way that the exam may unfold. That's tips on how to make them less horrible.
Yeah.
But again, we do want to stress that the sole responsibility to make a PAP exam more, to make it more pleasant and more empowering doesn't lie solely on the person receiving the care. I think that Aoife and I both have strong critiques of the dominant medical system and a lot of its failings and flaws when it comes to providing appropriate, compassionate, and empowering care to everyone, and especially for folks whose bodies and experiences fall out of the mainstream norm. So part of our work, even though we're both students learning to be midwives within the system of healthcare, is to continuously critique and challenge the dominant healthcare system, and its patriarchal roots, and its current oppressive structures that still deny appropriate, positive, healthy healthcare to everyone. We looked into some places in Guelph where folks could receive a PAP test in a queer positive environment, and we're really sorry to report that we didn't really come up with anything. If folks out there have had really positive PAP experiences or know of a queer positive clinic or care provider, we would be really into hearing about it. And perhaps folks can email Carly at Earful of Queer and let us know. Most of the resources that we found for PAPs in Toronto are in Toronto.
So the Sherbourne Health Clinic, of course, is a space that has strives to provide really good healthcare to queer folks. And also there's Planned Parenthood in Toronto as well.
It is possible to go to a sexual health clinic. It is possible to find some that are anonymous as well, where you don't have to give your name and information, to get PAPs done there as well.
Mm-hmm. So everybody should get a PAP if you have a cervix within 3 years of becoming sexually active. And the recommendation in Ontario right now is that you have a PAP every year. And if you have PAPs that come back normal for 3 years in a row, then talk to your care provider about switching to every 2 years or every 3 years. And they'll talk to you just about what sort of risk you're at in terms of your medical history, your family history, and your sexual practices, to see if every year is still the best choice for you, or if every 2 years or 3 years would be appropriate as well.
We also wanted to talk about some DIY, do-it-yourself healthcare at home, which offers some alternatives to receiving mainstream healthcare, and that involves getting to know your body, knowing what's normal for you, being able to detect changes happening for yourself, ultimately getting to know your body because you are the expert of your body and your experience, and no one else, not a doctor or a midwife, can really be the expert of your body. So we, at our workshop, we gave out speculums to folks and talked about ways that folks can do self-exams at home or with friends. And that offers an opportunity to see your cervix, which a lot of people have never seen. And it's sort of weird that other people, like care providers, are able to have access to this intimate part of our bodies when we may have never seen them ourselves. So that offers the opportunity to see and feel and get a feeling for what your cervix is like and how it changes over time, throughout cycles, throughout the month. But it isn't actually a substitute for getting the pap exam, which involves having some of the cells brushed off and, you know,
like analyzed
being
in a lab.
Sent to the laboratory. Yeah. And it feels really complicated to being strongly encouraging folks, especially folks who are traditionally marginalized and oppressed within the dominant medical system. So it also feels really complicated to be reaching out to folks, especially folks who have been traditionally oppressed and marginalized within the dominant healthcare system, to strongly encourage those folks to go to and access that healthcare model. Ideally, we would have alternatives completely to them, but it's not really the case. So we do encourage regular PAPs for everyone and anyone with a cervix. Hopefully we've provided some tips on making the experience more empowering and actually like a learning experience, and less of a, I'm gonna leave it at that. And also provided some information about why and when and where to access these resources. Although we remain committed to our critiques of those medical establishments, and strongly encourage folks to learn about their bodies, to share this information with their friends, to continue to build networks of alternative healthcare models, and to continue to work to celebrate our diversity, share our stories and experiences, and continue to heal and resist together.
Awesome.
Get a PAP.